Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. Today's talk revolves around a fascinating new book entitled Woman Through the Ages, a semi-autobiographical book, and it's on Amazon's top 10 hot new releases for women in history. And it's unlike any other book that I have read. So I warmly welcome to the show the author, Anne Merivale. Welcome, Anne, to Voice Rising.
Hello, it's nice to talk to you.
It's lovely to talk to you. How does it feel to have a new release out there?
I was very excited about it. This work has been a long time, and it had a very long gestation period. It took an enormous amount of research and work, and so it's really nice to get it out there.
Yeah, you can be very proud. It is quite a masterpiece. It is very, it's a tapestry, right? It's a weaving of so many profound stories. And you were originally a linguist, have your BA in French and Spanish, which explains your love for the language. And you later undertook further training with the renowned Jungian psychologist, or I guess it would be
psychotherapist,
Dr. Roger Wulger, right?
Where
you received your training in deep memory process therapy. What was it that drew you to the deep memory process therapy? Because this is a very important work if you're to understand woman through the ages, right? To understand all the deep memory process therapy that you've gone through and that you've been trained in. What drew you to that work?
Well, it took me a long time to be converted to the idea of reincarnation because I was brought up strongly Catholic. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the church, the belief in reincarnation was abolished at the Council of Constantinople in 553 AD mm-hmm. under the influence of the Empress Theodora, who had been a prostitute, and she didn't like the idea of coming back as anything other than an empress. Mm. And so she influenced her rather weak husband, the Emperor Justinian of Constantinople, to have it removed from the doctrine of the church, though in fact they never succeeded completely because they went through the Bible trying to cross out all the bits that referred to it. But lots of documents have been discovered in which, you know, the things that didn't get into the Bible, Jesus talked about it, Jesus took it for granted, the early church took it for granted. And then ever since then, there have been the Gnostics. I'm particularly interested in the Cathars. I was a Cathar martyr in the 12th century. Mm-hmm. I have a great soft spot for the Cathars. I call myself a Cathar nowadays. So it never really died out. The belief never really died out.
That's fascinating. I didn't realize that.
And I went to, in November 1991, I remember it precisely. We were living in the Hull area then because my husband's a professor of mathematics at the University of Hull in the northeast of England. We escaped from the north as soon as he retired in 2004. And it was a lecture about Edgar Cayce. You've probably mm-hmm. heard of Edgar Cayce, the famous American, the Sleeping Prophet, he's known as. And just the fact that he was a Bible-thumping evangelical Christian, and yet he came to believe in reincarnation, that plucked up my sparked up my interest, and I bought two books on him and was immediately converted to the idea and got absolutely fascinated. And then the following year, I went to a meeting of the Edgar Cayce Association, and I had been under the illusion that Edgar Cayce had been the only person in the world who could do past life readings. But mm-hmm. at that conference, I met people who'd had readings from a well-known American called Aaron Abrahamson. I think he must be long dead by now. Mm-hmm. He had worked with Edgar Cayce, and he did readings. So I sent off my $250 and got back this fascinating reading in which he told me, to my immense surprise, that I'd come this time round partly as a writer to disseminate information on the spiritual life. Mm-hmm. And he gave me five of my previous lives, which mostly rang pretty true for me. And that very summer, about a month after getting this reading, my family and I were driving through Spain, because at the time we owned a flat on the Costa Blanca, mm-hmm. and we were going to spend some holiday time there. And we stopped on the way in a beautiful little town called Cariñena. There's a famous wine comes from it. And we went into a shop and bought an evening picnic, and we were sitting on this bench looking at this very high wall with the church, and I thought to myself it was obviously a convent or a monastery. And Aaron Abrahamson had told me about her life as a Spanish nun, so I started to reflect about what it would have been like being a nun, and that gave me the idea for my first book, which is called Karmic Release. And eventually it took me a long time. I had a lot of interest from various publishers, but it didn't have any luck in the end. So finally I got it published in India. Mm-hmm. It's now gone out of print because I'm a devotee of Satya Sai Baba, and after he left his body in 2011, the firm that produced my book ceased to exist.
Oh, okay.
I just have a few copies left, but I feel that that book had served its purpose. Mm-hmm. It mm-hmm. helped a lot of people, so I'm told.
I mean, otherwise it would be interesting if one could reprint with another company, right? It would be a fascinating journey.
I don't feel it's necessary now, because I feel the woman book now is a much better book. Mm-hmm. It was my homeopath, osteopath, acupuncturist, in whose Ripon, he runs the Ripon Natural Health Centre up in Yorkshire, and I practiced my therapy there for a long time. And he told me way back in 1990 that I should write a book. That was because I'd written an article. Our third child is adopted and half Sierra Leonean. And so when he was 10, we had a family trip to Sierra Leone. Mm-hmm. And that inspired me to write a little article. And that got published in the Hull Freetown Twinning magazine. And when Mark Young, his name is, my current book is dedicated to him, he said I should write a book, and at the time I said I didn't think I had a book inside me. And then a bit after that, I went with a friend to see a clairvoyant where we live near Hull, and she told me, to my disbelief, that I would write lots of books. I really couldn't believe that. And then gradually other ideas came into my head, and so I'm now engrossed in writing my final book, which is the ninth. And I know it's my final book. I have various reasons for being sure it's my final book.
It's also the number
for... It'll be quite different again from all the others.
It's also the number, a little bit of completion, right? I mean, then after the nine, we have the...
Exactly, you know, the divine number.
The design number. So that's fascinating that it'll be your ninth book. Are you ready to reveal
death,
the...
Which is...
Oh, I was going to ask if you're ready to reveal the title or... Well, reveal the theme so that we can be tickled a little bit.
Yes. You want to know about my other titles?
Yeah, well what, the theme, so it's gonna inspire us.
Different. I have one on soulmate relationships that was published by the American company Llewellyn. Unfortunately, that went out of print, but I know there are copies around still. I have a few myself, actually. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is about the life plan, that was to be a joint book with the famous clairvoyant, sorry, I'm having a senior moment about her name, Lila Beck.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, she might be dead now. It was going to be her book with me being the scribe, because all her books were written really by other people. But mm-hmm. then she was too busy to write the book, but various people saw the idea and thought it should be written. So that was the first book I got published by my present publisher, John Hunt Publishing. And then the fourth one was on adoption. I thought of calling it Adoption and Karma, but then I broadened it. I called it Thicker Than Blood? A Fresh Look at Adoption, Fostering and Step Families.
Fascinating.
And then after that, I wrote a tiny book called Delayed Departure, because one of the things I've been doing in the spiritual work over many years was soul rescue work.
Mm-hmm.
And I had lots of interesting cases, and so that was just a little book about my own experiences of doing soul rescue. And then the next book is called Life Without Elgar. Have you heard of the great English composer Edward Elgar?
He's
one of our greatest composers, but not everybody knows about him outside England.
Yes.
And when I was 16, because my passion all my life, my big passion has been classical music. And when I was 16, I was so deeply in love with Elgar, not only his music, but the man himself. I thought I'd never get over the fact that he died 6 years before I was born. I did get over it in the end, because I now have a nice husband. But anyway, it was so strong, this feeling. I just had to find out what the root of it was. And many, many years ago, I heard the name Helen Weaver, who was his fiancée, who cleared off to New Zealand and broke his heart. And the name sort of went ding in my head. And a lot of us Wolga graduates, for some years we met regularly in France, because one of my good friends, a colleague, lives in France, and we used to meet at his house for a while. And one year I was determined to find out, to get to the root of, and they got me into a life where I had been Helen Weaver.
Fascinating.
And then, yes, it was. And not long after that, there's a lovely man called Timothy Day who owns a flat in the house, one of the many houses that Elgar lived in, which is in Hereford, which isn't that far from Malvern. And he used to hold meetings in what had been Elgar's study. Mm-hmm. And one evening we went to this very interesting meeting, afternoon rather, and when we got back I was in the kitchen producing a meal, and suddenly this series of letters started writing themselves in my head. A series of letters written between Elgar and Helen after she'd gone off to New Zealand, mm-hmm. because she remained in love with him, I'm sure. And that became part of the book. And the fascinating thing about that, and that is I've written the rest of the sequel in my woman book, a Portuguese university teacher whose wife had sadly died when their sons were only 13 and 9, I think. And after she died, he fell in love with Elgar's music. He'd been musical all his life. And then he discovered my book and read it and wrote to me, and we corresponded for a while. And then he came over for the Three Choirs Festival, which is a very famous music festival in England, which happens every year. It's been going for 300 years now. And he came over, and it was in Gloucester that year. It goes between Gloucester and Hereford and Worcester. And so we met in Gloucester, and we were in a B&B, which gave me an opportunity to do a regression with him. And this regression left me 200% convinced of his claim that he had previously been Edward Elgar himself. And we remained close friends. He now has a lovely new partner and a baby called Alice, who was named after Alice Elgar, who was who was Elgar's wife, of course. Mm-hmm. And Eduardo, funnily enough, his name is Eduardo. His wife, Rosa, who died, he's convinced that she had previously been Alice Elgar. So it's all very fascinating.
It is fascinating. So you are trained. You are, I mean, not you started out as a linguist, but then you became a therapist and also a writer, and you're trained then in regression therapy. How would you define deep memory process therapy? Or what's the difference, let's say, between other types of therapy, like rebirthing or...
Well, Roger developed his own, he's, as I said, a well-known Jungian psychotherapist, mm-hmm. and he developed his own method of doing it, because I think most regression therapists use hypnotherapy. Mm-hmm. But Roger didn't mm-hmm. like that, because he said it makes you dissociate, mm-hmm. and he liked you to get really, really into the life, because he said if you really relive it, then you can work through it and just let go of it forever. Mm. Mm-hmm. And his way of doing that is amazing. I'll just give you one example, one of the most powerful regressions I ever had, because my father did an extremely successful job of convincing me that I was stupid, because the problem with me was that I should have been a boy, because my father was the oldest son of an oldest son of an oldest son. Mm-hmm. And when I was a girl, that was the end of the world for him. And so he did a successful job of making me believe that I was no good at all for anything, which nowadays I regard as my great gift. Because if I'd had the blissful childhood that my two young grandchildren are now having down in Devon, there's no way that I would have become either a writer or a therapist. Mm-hmm. They're the two things that have given me the most satisfaction, because you can help people in ways that, to me, are unique. Mm-hmm. So Roger didn't use hypnotherapy. I'll give you one example. One workshop I did with him, this thing about my being stupid, which I still believed, even though I'd got a good degree in French and Spanish. He got me into the lifetime as a village idiot, the village idiot.
Hmm.
And this poor village idiot who was bullied and teased, and in the end they tied him up with ropes and threw him over the cliff. So literally Roger picked me up in his arms and dropped me onto the mattress. And it was so powerful, I could really feel myself landing on this beach at the bottom of this cliff. And then he taught me out of the idea of being stupid, because it belonged to that previous life, not to Anne's present one. So that cured me of that. And another example was another workshop I did. It was a refreshing one after we'd all got our diplomas. He liked to do refreshers now and again. And I'd had a great fear of travel, which all my friends thought was nonsense, because I travelled so much. My husband and I have travelled a lot over many years. But I still had this deep fear of travel. And my good friend Francois, who was a wonderful therapist and counsellor, also he ran his own primary school, he got me into a lifetime as a young boy, probably American Indian, and the group were fleeing from the white people, no doubt. And it got dark, and I was a boy of about 6 or 7, and I got lost in the forest, got left behind. Mm. And then it got dark, and so Francis said, can you hear the animals howling? And I said, yes, there was a bear. And then Francis sort of literally pounced on me as though he was a bear. And it was obvious that I got devoured by this bear. And that completely cured me of my fear of travel. I did it just a few months before my husband and I were going off on a tour of India, 7 weeks on our own. We travelled around India. And I no longer had any fear, and we had all sorts of interesting experiences.
Oh, that's so fascinating.
Weeks.
Yeah, fascinating.
And so I've been able to do that
with really healing by going through and experiencing the past lives, and then obviously seeing those patterns, right, that we carry through.
That's right. You have to see the patterns and then realize that they don't belong to now. And then Roger would take you, you know, through that, and then really make you let go of it, and then take you through into what's known as the bardo. You probably know that term. Mm-hmm. That's the best term for the. And that's the most where all the most important work is done, because there you can meet with your guides, or your guardian angel, or whatever, and discuss what it was you plan to learn in that particular life and work out whether you had learned that lesson.
Fascinating.
And if you had, then you could let go of all the problems.
And we're going to take a very small break. Hold on to your thought. We're going to take a very small break. And for all of you listeners, just think about that, how we can let go of our patterns from past lives and be present in this moment.
Okay.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
This is Kathy Beal, host of Celestial Compass, featuring astrology you can use. Celestial Compass points you to what's going on in the sky and what you can do with it down here on Earth. We also explore fun, effective, and cosmic tools for navigating this adventure we call life. Join me the first and third Monday of the month at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Celestial Compass. It's enlightening, entertaining, and empowering.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. With me today is writer and Mary Vale, whose new book gives us a fascinating and comprehensive picture of womanhood through the ages. And your book, Womanhood Through the Ages, brand new, out there on the market now. You draw our attention to some surprising facts about the achievements of women in historical times. For example, I was not aware that the first named piece of writing was a work of a Sumerian woman in approximately 2085 BC, or that it was a Japanese woman who wrote the world's first novel in the 11th century. And you have so many of these fascinating stories. Were these stories revealed to you during some of your past life regressions?
Not so much. I mean, we went to China. No, the Sumerian woman, I think I just found that on the internet. Mm-hmm. But we did a trip to China in 2015, and then we did a trip to Japan in 2017. Mm-hmm. And so I learned things from those trips, you know, from the guys we had. Mm-hmm. And obviously I did more research. Shall I say a bit more about how the book came about?
Yeah, talk about how the book came about. And what's really fascinating for me is that you seem to be very clear on sensing that women. I think what attracted me to the interview was what role did women play? How were our voices silenced? And which age are we coming into? It does seem like there's a greater respect for feminine energy that is finally, hopefully, arriving.
Yes.
And you really share a lot of very profound stories of women who were very talented and were not allowed to really live their gifts fully.
Yes.
So talk a little bit how the book came about. And, you know, it was interesting, too, because you don't call the book Women Through the Ages. You say woman. And that is the fascinating thing. It is like to see all these different lives that a woman, a soul has.
Yes.
Right?
As I said in the introduction, my story just happens to be my story, but it could be anyone else's, really.
Mm-hmm.
The thing
mm-hmm.
is, after my first book came out, I kept finding more lives. Mm-hmm. Usually, by flashbacks, when I was writing the first book, I had these five lives I'd been given by Aaron Abrahamson, but it wasn't enough. And my sister Philippa, who is also a writer and a healer, she'd come across a young man called Edwin Courtney, who's now so famous it's difficult to get hold of him. But he was only 20 when Philippa discovered him. And he gave me a lot more information. But at that time, I really believed myself to be unregressible. Mm-hmm. But then with all the training, of course, I got so that I could be regressed. But then gradually, and Edwin many years ago said to me that in due course I would be getting flashbacks to previous lives. And at the time, I just didn't believe it. I thought that sort of thing doesn't happen to me. But then it just did. I mean, one good example was I had two lives in Ravenna. I wrote them mm-hmm. in succession. I had a strong urge to go to Ravenna because at the time our younger son, who used to be a professional basketball player, he was living in Cremona. And we went to stay with him. And I'd been to Ravenna way back in 1961, I think, when I was a student. But David had never been there. And so we went there. And before we went, I just had a sense that I'd been martyred there.
Hmm.
And while we were there, I got this awful life where I was this dreadful woman who got converted to Christianity and thought she should convert prostitutes. And she emptied the brothels and got into trouble with the people who frequented the brothels. Hmm. And then she was martyred. She thought, you know, she'd been marvelous. But that came about because looking through my Roger notes at one point, I was very interested in notice that Roger said that martyrs didn't always go straight to the light.
Mm-hmm.
And that I found was what happened to me. Mm-hmm. I met Jesus in the Bardo, but he said, you know, it wasn't a good thing what you did. And so I had to come back as a prostitute. So I came back as a prostitute in Ravenna.
To have some compassion yes, for the...
It was a horrible life. But often I find with the writing, I just have to sit down at the computer and then it just comes of its own accord. You know, it's been fascinating. Sometimes I just didn't know what was going to happen, but then the story unfolds. And Roger was to say, well, it's got to have come from somewhere, so you might as well just trust it. And so, yes, so it gave me an insight into the working of brothels, which isn't a subject I would have, that was particularly savoury, that I would have wanted to research. But I thought it was very interesting.
Do you think, Anne, that every... Oh, I'm sorry. I was gonna ask you, do you think every soul has a certain frequency and this frequency stays with us no matter which personality or which, you know, do we have a vibrational imprint that stays with us no matter which gender or which life we're living? Do you sense that? Or, you know, what is your sense with... This is what fascinates me, I guess, maybe because, you know, we say that the soul enters the body when we arrive, but I'm always fascinated, when does the voice enter the body? And also as a singer and knowing so many writers and writing myself, It seems that we, you know, even after we leave our body, your books will still be there with your voice. And we are listening, right? And we are listening, many of us, without, you know, everyone's so afraid, many people are afraid to talk about death, but we're listening to Maria Callas, we're listening to Nina Simone, we're listening to people, Ethel Merman, we're listening to people that have already passed and reading books of great writers that have passed, but their voices are still very present. So my question is always, you know, I thought maybe I could ask this to you because you're one of the rare people that seems to have a lot of insights into all these different lives that you've, you know, not only personally experienced, but you've been a therapist and you've been in these huge groups of people that have regressed. Do you sense there's a certain red thread from a vibrational essence that is there?
Yes. I think I wrote about this in my book, although, you know, our lives have been so varied because the idea is you have to experience everything before you can be ready to depart forever. And I think, you know, all the different lives, they cover so many different sorts of fields of womanhood. It gives a pretty broad spectrum, I think.
Yeah.
But there are certain characteristics that seem to predominate, go through from one life to another. Always having a mind of my own, I think, and perhaps the worst life I found was the one in Myanmar. That was interesting. I got this compulsion to go to Myanmar. And I was going to go with David, but we'd already been to the Galapagos that year. That was a trip that was postponed. Oh, I forgot I wrote a little book about the Galapagos. That was spoken by animals while I was there. The animals spoke to me. That was just a fun book, really, though it does have some words of wisdom in it as well. When I was newly qualified, the first meeting we ever had in France, we took with us Roger's then deputy, and she made us start off by drawing a picture of somebody we really disliked, and so I drew a picture of Margaret Thatcher. And as a result of that, she got me into the lifetime of an imperious queen who behaved very badly, but I didn't get very deeply into it. But anyway, our trip to the Galapagos got postponed when I had an operation for breast cancer. And so when we'd been thinking about going to Myanmar in 2012, we were supposed to go to the Galapagos. We were thinking about going to Myanmar in 2013. But then when the Galapagos got postponed, David said he didn't want to go again anywhere so soon. So I asked my very close friend Peg, who again I mentioned in the woman book, because we've shared lives in the past, and she's one of my closest friends, if she'd come with me, and she was delighted. And it worked out very well, because when we were there, I got bombarded by this horrendous memories of where I'd been this dreadful queen who persecuted Buddhists. And funnily enough, Mark, to whom the book is dedicated, who has been my therapist for 35 years, my mentor, in his clinic I still theoretically work, but I haven't been up there since before COVID. And I don't know if I will now, because I'm not so keen on traveling now at my age, and it's an awful fag to get up there. But anyway, all my brothers were killed in the wars. This was in the first century, and there was a lot of warfare. Of course, Myanmar didn't exist as a country then. And so I had to be queen because all the brothers had been bumped off. And Mark, as he now is, had been my father's mentor, advisor. And when my father died, he was advising me. He jokes the fact that now that explains why you never listen to what I say. Don't you do? And he was trying to stop me do this, trying to point out that Buddhists were okay. But when my father was on his deathbed, I'd promised to defend the Nats of the spirits that they believed in, still do. The great thing about Buddhism, of course, is that it absorbs what's already there, not like Christianity, which tries to stamp it all out. So I promised my father that I would revere the Nats, since I thought anyone who was interested in some other spiritual figure should be eliminated. So I threw them into prison. This is one of, you know, some people say, oh, it's all a load of rubbish, you've invented it. But who would want to invent a terrible life like that? The last thing they'd want to do, I think.
Well, so that is the question. Enough. How do you sense that these memories are real? That would be a question. I'm sure that they're real for you, but many people would ask you, and not a figment of your imagination. So how can one really sense? Does one simply suddenly have also facts? I know there are some people that have been regressed. They can literally see the houses where they were. They can go back to them nowadays.
That's right,
and the houses are standing there, and they've described it, and they've been far away from these houses and have never, ever been to the village. I mean, it's pretty profound.
Yes. Yeah. Well, with me, it happened when I was actually in the place. There's this famous mountain called Mount Popa, mm-hmm. and the people who revere the Nats, that's where the home of the Nats. And so you were supposed to do an annual pilgrimage to pay reverence to the Nats. And mm-hmm. I actually climbed up this mountain. And it was just so real for me. I just knew that I'd done it before. I just knew. And to say anything in Ravenna, I just knew I'd been there before. But then, of course, I had to pay a debt for that lifetime. And so in 2015, when we were in China, I was sure, I knew I had to find a Chinese life. I thought I must have been a Buddhist at some point, because I've had so many Christian lives, I couldn't quite imagine mm-hmm. myself as mm-hmm. a Buddhist. But then as soon as we went to a tea plantation, I was keeping an open mind, and you know, I sort of thought I'd know when I got to the area I'd lived before, and it didn't happen until we went to the tea plantation. And then it was so clear that I'd lived there, and that was a good life, because my husband, my lovely husband I had then, we started, you know, we helped to get Buddhism started in China. So that paid that terrible debt that I'd incurred.
And we're going to take another very, very short break, and then we're going to be back with more about your wonderful new book.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. With me today is writer Anne Merivale, whose new book gives us a fascinating and a comprehensive picture of womanhood through the ages, and concludes that the time for equality and greater respect for feminine energy is finally arriving. Anne, we've listened to all many, many of your regressions and past lives, and we also know that you're a wise elder. You're 82 years old, You are an author. You've been a therapist. You've traveled the world. What are the most important lessons you've learned in this life?
Well, my big lesson, I know, is patience. I'm still working on it. Still working on it, yes. I had to be patient with getting the books out. But going back to how the book came about,
yes.
And I'd, so many previous lives came to me, I thought, you know, I really want to write another book about my previous lives. But it was quite gradually that the idea came to me of focusing on womanhood. Mm-hmm. And I think just the very fact that the most important point about my life was I'd been rejected at birth because of my gender,
mm-hmm.
that seemed to make sense, you know, to focus on that. And just gradually the idea of including all these other women came to me. And,
you were rejected from your father because he obviously was... Right, you said that he was the elder son or the oldest son of the father was a son. It was a long line. Yeah, all these sons. So he actually wanted a son and was obviously disappointed that he didn't have a son. So, I'm imagining that destroyed your self-confidence. So, did you ever? Number one, regain the self-confidence because you're to be able to write you're going on to your ninth book, you said.
Entirely thanks to the therapy. You know, I said before about how Roger cured me of the idea of being stupid,
mm-hmm.
which was dated from when I was a village idiot. And it's been a gradual process, you know. I've had to do a lot mm-hmm. of work. One of the big things that helped me, do you know the book by John Bradshaw?
No.
It's called, Homecoming, or Coming Home.
Sorry. Homecoming.
Championing the Inner Child. For years, a long time, I can't remember how long, I knew that I really had to sit down and work on my inner child, do my inner child work. And this Bradshaw book gives exercises to do. And it was in 1998, after I'd paid my first visit to Sai Baba's ashram, I mm-hmm. came back, and I felt Baba was pushing me into finally sitting down and doing this work. And it was very, very difficult, very painful. But I knew mm-hmm. I had to do it. And I mm-hmm. just had gave myself an hour a day. I sat down and I went back through my life working on, you know... thinking back to that poor little girl who was so sorry for herself and thought she was the worst thing that has happened, and telling her that she was okay and comforting
her.
And it absolutely changed my life. It really was a life transformation. So that, combined with the therapy I did with Roger Walgett, the other two, and also Markin Rippon, he helped me a tremendous. He challenges me all the time.
And where was your mother while you were a young girl? And obviously,
my poor mother had six of us to raise, and you know, she was just too busy. And mm-hmm. then another interesting thing is, she spent the whole of my life up until she died trying to convince both of us that I was like her, which was absurd because I was so patently unlike her. It's interesting because mm-hmm. my daughter isn't at all like me in any way. She isn't mm-hmm. spiritual, for one thing. She's immensely practical. She's a very, very useful daughter. And it was literally on her deathbed. Literally, she was dying of cancer, and my husband looked after the children for a week to let me go down to Oxford to help her before my sister Philippa and I put her into a nursing home where she died just 4 days later.
Mm-hmm.
And my youngest brother, William, he married an Irish girl, who's now a successful novelist. But when she got married, she didn't change her name. She kept her name Denise Woods. And while I was with my mother, this letter came through the post, and she'd written on the back Denise Woods. And my mother said, oh, I do wish Denise had changed her name to Merivale. And I had this mm-hmm. argument with her, because my husband had been saying not long before that he thought it had been a bit sexist, my changing my name. And David's name is Pearson, which is a fairly common name. Mm-hmm. And after I started doing my own thing again, I sort of felt a desire to use my own name, especially as it's unique. And so we had this argument, and she finally said, "Oh, well, you're different from me." So I thought,
Did the books start, or did you feel your writing career changed when you started using Mary Vale as a name, or did it make no difference whatsoever?
I had already started using the name Mary Vale before I started writing.
It's a beautiful name. It's a very beautiful name.
Yeah.
So your mother didn't really encourage you as a child. She just was too busy raising all her other kids.
She didn't understand me. She absolutely didn't understand me. Yeah. And only a few months ago, I was sort of thinking about her. And I realized that I didn't have any relationship with her at all, really. It was though I haven't found any karmic link with her. I don't know why I chose her as my mother. But I asked her, you know, why did she want me to be like her? And the reply that came in my head was because I was lonely, which made a lot of sense, I think, because my father must have been a very difficult man to live with. Actually, I made friends with him. He came through, again, that's in the book, in, I think it was 2017, I went to a spiritist church with my great friend Peg. And he came through and it was very moving, and it was so very clearly him, it just couldn't have been anyone else. The medium described him precisely. And it was lovely because he said he was proud of me and he apologized for the way he'd treated me.
So that was very healing, right? It must have been very healing.
It was very healing. But with my mother, I haven't had anything like that. And when I did that little talk, I was told that she was coming back into a new life in Australia, which was interesting because she'd spent 9 years as a child in her adolescence in Australia, because my grandfather, who was a professional musician, he was the conductor of the Sydney Theatre Orchestra for 9 years. And she so loved Australia, and she used to talk about it as a child, when I was a child. And she was she was both an actor and an artist, neither of which my father appreciated because he wasn't artistic. He wasn't musical.
So did she stop all that? Did she stop that probably when she was raising so many children?
That's right. She didn't, and my father didn't encourage her at all, which was a shame. So she, you know, she really wasn't allowed to use her gift in that lifetime. So what I was told by some spirit, I had no idea, was that she was incarnating in Australia, which she loved, and she'd be able to use her gifts in this next lifetime. So I trust that's true. And maybe I'll be so again someday. But at the moment, she doesn't really mean anything to me.
And if generations from now, people would be, if years from now, people would be listening in and reading your book, this wonderful book, which is Woman Through the Ages, is there any wisdom that you'd like to pass on to them? Or is it all in the book?
I think one thing is to not worry about what other people think. That's another thing I've had to learn. I still have to work on it. To be true to yourself.
To be true to yourself.
And okay, people, you know, I know lots of people do think me a nutcase, especially in this retirement village. Most of them are on a complete... there are some wonderful people here, and, you know, it's a lovely community, but a lot of them probably think I'm a nutcase, so they're too polite to say so.
Well, I learned something very beautiful that you might enjoy. The word weird, which was originally spelled W-Y-R-D, which is an old English word, it actually meant destiny and fate. And it was given to those people that could go between different worlds that were a little bit, you know, a little bit different because they were able to bridge different worlds. So if people think that we're weird, it might be literally because we're able to go between different different layers of reality.
Yes.
So maybe it's a compliment. right? Yes. You're not nutty. You might just be weird. Because, of course, I mean, if you've experienced all these different, you know, all these different personalities, all these different bodies, all these different stories, I would think at some point you would come closer to your true essence, because you'll see that they're all, you know, they're all just roles that have been played. But somewhere you get closer to your true, your truth as a soul.
Yes. I was saying about the Cathar, so I would like to see myself as a Cathar. I had a really interesting experience this May, which I've written about in my current book, the one I'm working on now, because I have a spirit guide for this book that was I was given it by a clairvoyant artist. For my 75th birthday, I gave myself a present because one of my clients produced this wonderful drawing he'd had done by a clairvoyant of his guide, and I decided to get one from her. Mm-hmm. And she came up with this previous, a former slave who'd campaigned against slavery, just my sort of bloke, because when our son Christopher was growing up, we were very actively anti-racist. We're doing all sorts of things, you know. So it was just my sort of bloke. And at the time, although the Knight's book, which incidentally Mark had and I had the same idea independently at more or less the same time, which makes me feel even more that it's got to be written. And she said then that she thought he'd be my guide for my Knight's book. And I was going off to France for a meeting with my colleague Chris, who lives down there, the one whose house we used to meet, many of us. Mm-hmm. It should have happened 2 years previously, but it finally happened this May. And Amos came through one night and said, when you're in Cathar country, you'll meet someone who wants his story told. And that did happen in most surprising circumstances. I won't tell you now because I don't want to spoil the story for when this book finally comes out. But it was quite amazing. I had this experience. I actually met a Cathar who died there.
So many synchronicities happening or happen when we start tuning in to these different stories.
Yes.
Right? I think that is what I hear from you, that you sense that also with all your travels, you seem to be pulled to places where you've either had past lives, or somehow while you're in these places, these stories start coming through, which
is... Yes, because now the current book, the one I'm writing now, isn't my story at all. It's other people's stories. Mm-hmm. Some of it's fictional. I'm trying to show all the possible different post-death scenarios. And when I was in Iceland in June, we just went on a four-day trip, David and I, with our daughter. I picked up this story, which I've just finished writing about. So yes, it's going to be very different again, this final book.
Well, it is a pleasure to speak with you and to see also that you continue to write and write and write and learn and grow and travel. A great inspiration with 82 years old.
I think my travels are more or less over now.
Yeah.
Except, I need to go to Lanzarote. I'm going with my friend Peg in March because David doesn't want to do any more travel. And I know who I've got to write about in Lanzarote.
So where's the best place to, after that, you're going to stay put? Where's the best place to get your books? Is it on the online bookshops, or are they in bookshops?
Oh, yes, it's on Amazon, yes. And, of course, I'm asked to ask everybody to do me reviews on it. I hate asking people to do reviews, but that's what we should do.
Well, we'll practice your self-confidence now and flip the father pattern. So now, Anne, give me some wonderful reviews. Go get the book. That's okay. We can do that. It's a beautiful cover. It's a beautiful color of rose, actually.
I got one of my hunches about the cover because the publishers told us to, they like it if you go on to Adobe stock and find a cover there. And I've typed in woman and women, And there was, I went through hundreds and hundreds of pictures, and there just wasn't one that drew me. But then I had this idea, and we had a student cleaner at the time, and he mentioned that he was engaged to be married to this girl who was doing a degree in art and design, the interior decoration. So I said, is she good at drawing? And he said, she's brilliant. So I told her what I wanted, and she produced exactly what I wanted.
Yeah, a beautiful cover. Yeah. And thank you so much for being with me today at Voice Rising. Thank you for really awakening us to so many stories. I mean, it's quite a fascinating book that you have written. And yeah, it's also fascinating to see with all the women's voices who have been suppressed, oppressed, and silenced, they keep on coming through and shining. In the end, there's just so many gifts that you've revealed through this book. So thank you so much.
Well, it's been lovely to talk to you. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, have a good evening.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.